And welcome back to Coast. Tonight we begin our tribute to Art Bell. You know, it's hard to believe that a year ago today, Art Bell, our show's founder, died at the age of 72 from a legal prescription overdose. One of Art's regular guests will join us in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast on this very special night, of course, as we celebrate the anniversary of Art Bell and his incredible life. This being his one-year anniversary of his death. Art died, as I mentioned, at the age of 72 years old. One of his regular guests is a man who himself has died four times, Danion Brinkley, and he's with us. Danion, I want to thank you for joining us in this moment. It really is very special to us.
I believe that, Art, and I think it's a tribute. I mean, you know, I believe that about Art, and I appreciate the tribute. The tribute, George, because when I go back and think so long ago, Art and I were really good friends, and I remember some of the funniest events. And those, it's about celebrating a man's life, George.
It didn't he broadcast from your hospital room once when you were very sick?
This is what kind of a friendship is, that when I had to have brain surgery in 1997, Art and Ramona came to the bedside, and he, because they didn't give me much chance of survival. And he came, and he ran the show from there. And he got people to pray for me. Watch how wild this was. He got people to pray for me. And it wasn't so much prayer, but how George, how he said it. And then all of a sudden, all the pain I was in subsided, and I was in this bluish energy pattern. And when I told him about it after I came where I could talk and was cognitive, the faces that he made were so funny and wonderful, because you know Art. Everything was about Art, George. It wasn't about it was on the radio show. It was about Art. And Art never believed any of this stuff, okay? Never believed it. Never believed it. He just saw politics was burning out, and he knew he needed to go to another pattern, and he found this pattern, and away he went. But one time we were sitting at his house, because I knew he was going through the issues with Trey and the stuff that his son was going through, and
right.
It was just a really strained place for him. And Ramona had a letter that was sent to Art from a friend of his son's, and you know how I am, George. I just listen to the voice, and
yeah.
I pick up so much information.
Exactly.
And so she handed me the letter, and Art was talking, and it wasn't anything to do with the letter, and I handed it to him. I said, Art, I know what's in the letter, because I had heard the voices. And I told him what was in the letter and the automobile that the woman had that was driving that brought this letter over about his son. And he was the funniest thing in the world, because all of a sudden that thing that we all think or hope it's true, he had witnessed it in a place, and he thought I read what was in the envelope, okay?
Yeah.
He thought I knew what was in the envelope because of holding it like Kreskin.
Right, up to your head.
That's not how I do it. But we saw his face, and Ramona, so cool as Ramona was, he went outside, and I said, Ramona, what's the matter? She says, Danion, he doesn't believe any of this stuff. And he said, what you just did, she said, he's outside smoking 20 cigarettes. She chuckled, George. And what made Ramona so beautiful was that chuckle and that understanding of how it all worked.
Didn't he eventually start believing this?
There was no question. There was no question. I watched the evolution over 20 years of George, you know, and being on the show. Look, the greatest tribute that, I like funny stuff about him, but the greatest tribute in my life and in the life of anybody who serves in the military is Art. After 1997, when I came back from that near-death experience, it was about creating the Twilight Brigade. And since we're all veterans, you, me, him, that in creating the Twilight Brigade, which came from that near-death experience,
mm-hmm.
then every year for 20 years, we've done Coast to Coast 11-11 veteran was.
That's right. Absolutely. I remember when I was filling in for him, Danyon, I would get a call. I was doing my local show in St. Louis. I was on the air, and Alan Corbett would call my producer. And we were in the Midwest, coast to coast, would go on live at midnight, 10 o'clock Pacific time, 1 in the morning Eastern time, and then 11 o'clock Mountain time. But so I'd be on the air. It would be 11:30 p.m. Central time. And Alan Corbett would call my producer and say, I need George to go on tonight for Art. He's not going to go on. He just called me. And so Howard would tell me during the commercial break, he'd say, you need to prepare for Coast to Coast tonight. You're on in 30 minutes. And I'd run down the hallway to the other studio, get hooked up at midnight, ready to go, have my material in my hands. And then the engineer for Coast to Coast would tell me, like Dan Galante is our guy here, he would say in my ear, when you hear the theme song for Coast to Coast, which is the same one we have now, if you don't hear Art's voice, you're on. And I said, I said, what do you mean? Corbett just called and said that I'm filling in tonight. He said, we don't really know. So if you don't hear Art's voice, go. If you hear Art's voice, go home and we'll pay you anyway. And I said, no, I don't want to get paid if I don't do the show. You know, I'm thinking more long term. Be nice to these people. You know, they'll
Absolutely.
Keep calling you. And sure enough, you know, a couple times I'd be in that studio ready to go and the theme song would be, and all of a sudden you'd hear from the high desert. And I went, well, he's on, and I'd leave. Or sometimes you'd hear nothing and the engineer would go, go, you're on, you're on. And it was amazing. I've got you for one more minute here, Danyon. And
okay, but you were the consummate artist. You were the consummate artist.
Well, I learned. I learned from listening to him. I mean, the guy was a master in the mysteries and in the theater of the mind. That's what Corbett said when Art got his Hall of Fame award. Alan said, "This guy creates the theater of the mind better than anybody," and he was so right. So right, but
no question. But let me tell you one more funny thing, quick.
Right, I've got 30 seconds.
Okay, he got a Trans Am, this hyped up Trans Am, the dream car from all guys from the 60s. And he decided to take me to get the mail. And we went to get the mail, George, at 140 miles an hour.
Amazing. Danyon, thank you for being on this tribute moment. I really appreciate it. Now, of course, there would be no tribute moment without listening to Art Bell, would there? So for the rest of the hour, we're going to hear a couple clips that I picked out that would not be indicative of the shows, but it would be indicative of Art Bell.
I'm going to read you a fax that I've got here, and I would like everybody to not call my wild card line. Please, if you're calling the wild card line, hang up, and I'm going to tell you why. Here's what I've got. Art. Answer the wild card line. My boyfriend is in a small plane north of Las Vegas and is ready to fly into Area 51. He has been trying to call you by cell phone. Now, it's signed by a name, and I'm not going to give that name, so I will know when the right person calls me on the phone. But whether or not you're able to get through to me, I would like to tell you that two things may occur if you try to fly into Area 51. One, you will be forced down and interrogated and probably arrested as the least case. Or worst case, you will be shot down. And so I'm telling you, you should not do this. But if you're already in the air, and you really want to call in, you go ahead and call me now on the wild card line. And if you verify the person who signed their name here at the bottom, I will verify you as the person who sent the fax or the boyfriend of that person. And I will put you on the air. Again, let me tell you, Art, answer the wild card line. My boyfriend is in a small plane north of Las Vegas, ready to fly into Area 51. He's been trying to call you by cell phone. And here he is. You're on the air. Hello.
Hello there. Is this Art Bell?
Yes, sir, it is.
Yeah, my name, I won't give you my last name.
Okay, wait a minute, sir. Hold on. The fax is signed by somebody named who?
Jill,
that is correct. So you are the one.
That's my girlfriend.
Yes, sir. Where are you?
Well, I'm up here from Fort Worth in my little airplane. It's a long sea I built myself. It's a Burt Rutan design, but the Ford Canard, I'm not sure if you know the kind. It's an experimental aircraft.
No, I'm not.
Classified that, but not anymore.
No, tell me about it. What kind of airplane is it?
Well, it's a long easy. It's got 120 horsepower, Lycoming, in it, but we had it board stroked and fixed it up a little bit. It usually flies around 140 to 160 indicated airspeed. I'm right now at 7,000 feet. You know where this place called Indian Springs is?
Indian Springs, yes.
Yeah. Well, I've been flying now for about 45, 49 minutes here between Beatty, is that what you call it, and Indian Springs. And I figure I'll just go on up here and try to get into this Area 51. I'm right south of this Nevada test site, or Nellis Air Force Base.
Listen.
And I'm right outside this restricted zone.
Listen to me. When you fly into that zone,
yeah,
they are going to either force you down or shoot you down. Don't you know that?
Well, you know, I've been in a lot of Air Force bases, and I've been in the Air Force for many years. I'm an ex-Air Force, but I'm just going to tell you that, you know, as an American citizen, we have the right to know what's up there in this Area 51. And I've been listening to you boys talk about this. Hold on here. I'm making a turn. And, just a second here. And I'm going to go on up there and see what's going on. And I just wanted to let you know about that before I do that, don't you know?
How long do you estimate it's going to be before you,
I think about 14 minutes. I can crank this baby up a little bit here. Let's do that. Let's crank this thing on up. We've got some pretty good mountains here off to my, west, don't you know? I'm turning up north right now, and I can see the Air Force base out there in the distance. It's, got three runways. It looks like they're all lit up. And, A-shaped. It's like north-south. Got a lot of desert up here, don't you, boys?
A lot of desert, yes. A
lot of desert.
Up here. You're liable to get yourself killed.
I'm sorry, sir. You have to speak so loud. I cranked this engine all the way up here. I hope
I said. I said you're liable to get yourself killed.
Well, we'll get up there in a few minutes, yeah, and we're just going to see what's going to happen because this is a. I've got red crosses painted on this baby, and I got hospital on it. See. And maybe they're going to think that I'm on some kind of a mercy flight and I'm just off course. And I've got the radios cut off because you can have radio failure, don't you know? And so I'm going to hold this thing steady here about around 6,800 feet.
Why are you doing this?
I'm going to get to the bottom of this. I'm a American. My family has been American for years. And I'm going to get down in here and I'm going to find out what's happening.
All right, then why are you doing it at night?
Because that's the best way to get in here.
But no, even if you manage to overfly the area, what
I'm
do you...
I'm in the restricted zone. I just entered the restricted zone. I see a bunch of lights out there. It's like some kind of a searchlight coming on.
You're in the restricted zone now?
I just crossed that restricted zone. I'm going to drop this thing down.
I'm telling you, you're going to get shot down.
Hold on here now. I got my pressure suit on. I don't really need one in this kind of aircraft. It's not like a jet, but it helps us. When I make the tight turns here, and I'm going to cut down here. Now, let's see what these boys are going to do. I don't see anybody coming up here yet. I just see a bunch of lights. But I'm pretty far from that Area 51. I figure about another 8-9 minutes here. And it's hard to calculate it right now trying to talk to you. I'm trailing an antenna out here about 30 feet so I can keep this phone conversation. If we get cut off, then, but I'm going to go up here and see what's going on. They say there's a bunch of UFOs and there's all kind of things out here. And I'm going to get this baby right down here about 1,000 feet. And we're going to see if there's any UFOs or anything out here, what's going on.
Listen, I think you're making a mistake.
Well, sir, I might be, you know, but, you know, our tax dollars pay for all this. And these boys, they've been hiding everything under all this black projects and all this great funding and all this kind of thing.
Don't you think, sir, hold it. Don't you think that we have a right to national security secrets?
I think we have, not really, because you know they have these K-11 and K-15 satellites up there, and the Russians, they know what we're doing, and the Chinese, they've got satellites down here. They know what's going on. The only thing that don't know what's going on is the common folk like me and you, and us common folks got a right to know because we're funding all this.
How long have you been planning this?
I got this thing down here by 1,000 feet. I've been planning this thing now. I'm right on the deck, not quite on the deck. I'm at 1,000 feet. Boy, they got light bulbs popping up everywhere. I'm telling you, they got searchlights. There's about four of them out here. And I've been planning this now for, anywhere from a month to 6 weeks. It took me a while to paint up the plane because I had to use that Imron. It's the only thing that sticks to this gel coat I got on. This thing's built out of Kevlar and carbon fiber. I got it stressed, 8G positive, 10G negative. It's overbuilt. I tell you what, I'm going to get down here and squirm like a little frog that's been dipped on by a big dog when I get down here. A few minutes here, I'll tell you that. Because I'm not going to... Hey, looks like there's an F-16 coming up here.
I wouldn't be surprised. You're making a mistake.
There's scrambling somebody down there. He's got some afterburners on because I can see him. He's about 5 miles out. That old boy's cranking. Yes, sir. And I see something opening up here on the ground. It's I'm pretty low now. I'm starting to pick up all kind of buildings down here. I see something here is level with the ground, and this they're opening this thing up. There looks like something's coming up out of that. I can't tell you what it is. It must be on some kind of a. Hold on here. I gotta make this turn.
All right.
I think this old boy's gonna head up here for me.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Oh, he's going to be up here right directly because he's in F-16, sure as hell. He's coming to hold on here.
I would advise you to turn your...
Hold on in here. We can do that.
I would advise you to turn on your radio.
Come on, baby. Come on, baby. Come on, baby. We can do this now. Come on here. Hold on. This old boy's coming up here. Now, he's got his lights. He's got his lights on and he's flashing me.
Yeah, he's probably...
I'm waving at him. No radio. He don't know that.
Well, if I were you, I'd turn it on.
I hope these folks are listening to Art Bell, because everybody listens to Art Bell.
Well, maybe if you're making...
I got to get some air speed.
You're making a bad calculation, because if they're not listening, you're going to be shot down.
I don't know what he's going to do here. He's rocking his wings at me right now. He's rocking his wings, and he's cutting in front of me. And you know, this... Oh, don't cut in front of me now, because if he cuts that close, stay off. Here's a vortex from his engine, from Pratt & Whitney engine. We're going to, just like twin tornadoes, if he gets too close, stay off, boy. Hold on here. I'm getting down on the deck. I'm going in. I'm getting down there. He ain't going to get me. I'm a damn veteran. He ain't going to get me there. They didn't get me over there. They're not going to get me over here now. Looks like some kind of rail gun coming up out of that elevator, that flat area over there that the door's opened up. It's got some kind of a weird-looking barrel on it with a light. And, hell, they're doing something. They're shooting at me now. Oh, God. No, baby, I'm going in. I think I'm going in.
Oh. Well, I'm not sure what we just heard. All I can tell you is I got a fax that read, Art, answer the wildcard line. My boyfriend is in a small plane north of Las Vegas and ready to fly into Area 51. He's been trying to call you by cell phone. I withheld the signature at the bottom of the fax so I could be sure that if I did get the person, I could verify it. Indeed, it was signed by Jill. Now, whether what you just heard was a hoax or the real thing, I have no way of telling you, and I have no way of knowing. You tell me.
Amazing, isn't it? Now we're going to come back with more of our tribute to Art Bell in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to our Art Bell tribute part of the program here. Art passed away a year ago at the age of 72. But it would not be a tribute without talking about one of his incredible stories, Mel's Hole.
Now to Eastern Washington. I guess this is Eastern Washington. Mel, are you there?
Yes, I am.
First of all, Mel, thank you for answering. What are you doing up at this time of the morning?
Well, after I sent the fax, I'm living in town here now because we had a couple of our buildings out there cave in after the big snows that we had out here last month.
Oh, yes.
And so thereby goes some of the construction debris into the hole. So,
all right. When did you discover this hole?
Well, the hole has always been there. We've been out there for a couple of years now, and you know, the hole has been there since we've been there. It's been there since the previous owner was there, and the previous owner there was quite elderly, and I'd say he was there for a good 30, 40 years before we moved in.
Wow.
And then
and so there's been a thing of throwing stuff down this hole for a long time.
It's been going on, you know, for as long as the hole has been there, I assume.
When nobody knows that, I guess. All right. How do you pronounce the name of your town, Manistash?
Manistash.
Manistash. Right. That's right. Thank you.
Actually, I'm in, right now, I'm in a little town called Ellensburg.
Oh, I know Ellensburg. All right.
You must know about a rodeo here then.
Oh, sure.
Okay. Well, so, we've been there for several years. And, you know, we take all of our trash, rubbish, anything we have that we have to get rid of, we take it, throw it in the hole. Everyone's throwing their stuff in the hole. The people from around there throw all the stuff in the hole. I mean, it's just been going on for a long time. Well, I got this thinking one day, how come this hole is not filling up? It must be an awfully deep hole.
That's a good thing to consider, sure, as you throw stuff in it for decades, literally.
And so, you know, I used to be I would say pretty close to a professional shark fisherman. So I had a couple of huge fishing reels, went out there and started letting the line down. I figure after one...
Did you weight the line?
Oh, yeah. There's in fact, the original line is still down there. I've just been adding to the line and keeping track of how much line I have used. So I've not reeled it in.
How much weight is on it?
There's a one-pound weight at the bottom of it.
One-pound weight, all
one
right.
One-pound weight. It's a triangular one-pound weight.
Okay.
And so that's at the bottom of it. At first...
So in other words, it would go down kind of like a plumb bob.
Exactly. In fact, I have it rigged across the center of it there, and it goes, you know, goes straight down from the center there. And occasionally I try to move the line there, but when you're moving that much line, you really can't do a whole lot with it. But it seems to, you know, there seems to be... It's not resting against anything at this point here, and it continues to go down freely. And so when I was out there earlier, I let out a little bit more line. And
so you actually went out there tonight after I read this?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, but, man.
Well, you know, it's not too bad out here right now. It's only about 25 degrees, so it's not too cold.
Have you ever heard anything coming from any sounds or anything?
You know, I mean, the normal thing to do is kind of, like, yell into it there, to, you know, to see an echo, and I've never heard an echo come out of that thing.
No echo.
At all. You know, that's one of the first things I noticed about it. As usual, I brought the dogs with me. They wouldn't go anywhere near the damn thing, and I went back to the Suburban and hung out over there, so... It was kind of, if I try to bring them there on a leash, they'll just dig their feet in. They do not want to go anywhere near the hole. And so that's, I don't know. It's just,
well, you've got miles and miles of,
I'm measuring it by feet. You know, I convert feet to yards, so I don't know how many miles that is. I assume it's a fair number of miles, though.
Well, 5,280 feet is a mile, so you really think you've got 80,000?
Yes. Yeah, I get line in 5,000-yard spools, and so I've gone through that many.
Well, you have got a hole, then, that goes
Well, you know, you can't say to the center of the Earth, but you've got a hole that goes miles and miles and miles into the Earth. I would think a university would be out there, boom, just like that.
Well, my wife does work for a local university here, and, you know, we've been talking to them about it, and one of the things is they find it quite incredible that I've let that much line into the ground, but that's what I've been doing.
Have you ever thought of winding it all back up again?
Well, when I let out the first 1,500 yards of line, I reeled all of that back in.
Yeah.
And I wanted to know if I had hit water down there, because I thought that's a lot of feet.
You bet.
You know, that's 4,500 feet of line. Did I hit water? So I sent down a roll of lifesavers.
Lifesavers?
Yeah. So when it hits the water, the lifesavers will dissolve.
That's true. Oh, I see. So very smart. So
yeah, it's an old shark fisherman's trick. There, we used to send our bait out on a balloon attached to a roll of lifesavers, and the bait would go out into the ocean on the tide.
Yeah.
And then eventually the lifesavers would melt, and the bait would fall to the bottom. You know, you couldn't cast a big old mackerel out there that far. So
that's amazing. So, what do you? You got any guesses?
I don't. I have no idea. I thought it could have been. I could have been a mine shaft. But the thing about it is the surface part of it's been very well cared for. I mean, someone built a very lovely wall around it. And
all right, tell me about the nature of the side of the walls. In other words, you must be able to look down far enough at least to examine the side of the walls.
Sure. It's stone for about 15 feet down.
Yeah.
And then after that, it's soil, dirt, and then, you know, further down, rock. You know, so, but I can only see to the extent of, really powerful flashlight. I brought halogen lights out there to try to get a better look down there, but the visibility really isn't there. You cannot see much after a while. But it's a retaining wall. I'd say it's about a 3.5 foot retaining wall, and it goes down about 15 feet, and then it's...
Well, I'll tell you this much. No matter how powerful a light, and I was even thinking about a laser... when you're talking about 80,000 feet, forget it.
They should have some technology that can give me an idea of how deep this thing is. I mean, obviously, the old fishing line method is only going to go so far.
What we need here is a volunteer. Really, I'm serious. Somebody who would be willing to be lowered into this hole.
I don't, to be honest with you, I don't even know if there's any air down that far. I mean,
I wouldn't know about that either.
Or,
yeah, that's
you know,
true.
What kind of pressures we're dealing with. These are things that, you know, are totally beyond my my grasp in terms of, you know, knowledge about these things. But
do you own this property?
It's our property, yeah.
Uh-huh. How long have you been working on this?
Well, we've been out there for a couple of years, I said about 4 years now. But this project here with letting down the line, that's only been... since last summer here, and it was just,
last
you know,
summer.
I said, well, how come this thing isn't filling up?
Well, sure.
And then, you know, I talked to the neighbors around there, you know, which are, you know, when you're out there in the country, your neighbors are pretty far away, but they all know the hole out there.
They all know about it. So it's
yeah, because they all bring their trash out there.
So the local legend of the hole.
Yeah. This could be an apocryphal story, but one guy claims that he threw his departed canine down into the hole.
Oh, really?
And the story is the guy that did it swears the dog actually came back to him. And he was a
really
hunter. He was a hunter. The story is that he was a hunter, and he was out there hunting, and he saw the same dog. He had the same collar. He had the same little little metal thing on his collar there. And he said it was the same dog. And he says he knew he threw the dog into the hole. That's not my dog. That's not my.
It's not your story, but it's a story of a resurrected dog.
Yeah. This is, as you can well imagine, this is all Native American land around here. And so one of the lines of inquiries I'd like to make is, you know, is there anything about this hole in regards to the Native Americans? You know, that's something I haven't really pursued right now. But
if you had a fatal disease, Mel,
yeah,
would you jump in the hole?
I would.
You would?
Just based on the dog story? It is in my will.
What?
Should I meet my demise?
That you would be thrown in the hole?
Disposed of into the well.
I'm not sure the health department would allow that.
Well, you know, one of the things that we, you know, I thought about later on is, what if this is like contaminating our water, you know? And, you know, we've had, you know, I'm sure you do this out there in Pahrump, too.
Well,
you
no
have your
person,
water checked all the time.
Well, yeah, no personal offense to you, Mel, but if there was a possible contamination problem, I'm sure you're a clean guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, as you deteriorated, you would possibly produce E. coli or something horrible in the local water supply.
Well, again, so far it hasn't.
If you weren't resurrected.
I mean, the water around that area is absolutely pure water. It is, you know.
And so nothing thrown down, all the old junk and trash,
no.
And nothing has polluted the water.
No, I mean, you know, I can't speak for everything that's been thrown down there, but so you know, none of that has been showing up in the water that people draw from their wells. I mean, you know, the water's as clean as it's ever been out there. I think we get water that comes off the Cascades or something.
Yeah.
It's just really great. It's really wonderful water.
Mel, you wouldn't be pulling my leg.
No, I'm not. And I'm one of the reasons that I went out to the property tonight, other than it just, you know, it's something that weighs heavily on my mind. I was afraid that after I sent the facts out, that there'd be people around there, because it's...
Well, there may be, but we have not identified specifically where it is.
Well, there aren't, as far as I could tell, too many big holes like that around. And so at least the people in my neck of the woods are familiar with it. And I kind of almost expected to see a small party of people.
Well, there may be. Now, I mean, you know, come daylight, there may be, but remember, folks, this is private property. This is Mel's home.
It is posted, too.
Oh, it is. All right. Well, there you are. So without knowing exactly where it is, I wouldn't look for that to occur, but there is going to be substantial curiosity about it now, Mel.
Well, you know, I think I've, you know, let you know as much as I know about it, I certainly want to find out more. I was mostly curious about the depth of it. I mean, how deep is the deepest hole anyone has ever found?
Well, I've never heard of anything deeper than this.
You know, I thought maybe this would be like Guinness World Book of Records type hole here. As far as things I thought it would be like, could have been like an old mine.
Well, now here's a couple things to think about. I've heard as you go down into the earth, Mel, that it gets hotter.
Ooh.
Right? So
yes.
You would think that your fishing line with a weight on it at some point would melt or, you know, something, but there's still weight on it, huh?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
The line is not moving freely. I mean, you know, it still falls under its own weight.
Oh, that's amazing. Let's let some of the audience ask you questions.
Okay, I think I can do that.
All right, because I just might be missing something. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Mel. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Dave in Milwaukee.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, I was listening to this. Very interesting.
Yeah, it is.
I just wanted to let you know, I looked up an encyclopedia, and the Marianas Trench, which is the deepest hole we know about.
That's in the ocean, right?
Right. It's 36,000 feet deep.
So this is... Well, certainly over double that already.
Right. And it also says, under mining, that with current technology, we can only go down about 1,600 feet.
Wow.
That's great. That is great.
So you've got something here that already qualifies for Guinness.
That is wonderful. I like that. That's great. Did you said 1,600 feet?
That's what they said, yeah. 1,640 feet, it says, with current technology is about as deep.
All right. Thank you very much for that information. So already we now learn that you may have a Guinness qualifying hole there, no question about it.
Art Bell may be gone. but his legacy lives on.
Well, I never knew I had Martians in my garden, and I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware, but now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Good morning or good evening, wherever you may be, whichever world you're living in, whatever century.
For Dan Galante, Gina Salvati, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Greg Bishop, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Badal, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.